From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Groz.
And welcome to Capitol Connection. We are back again this week, broadcasting from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, just blocks away from our state capitol, covering the issues that matter most, family, freedom, and life. We have a lot to get to today. Obviously, there was an election, which people are tired of hearing about. But here's what is not being talked about enough. What do these results from the Nebraska-specific races mean for family values and the pro-life movement in our state? We're going to talk about it. But of course, today is Veterans Day. So we want to start by humbly saying thank you. Thank you to all of our veterans who have sacrificed, put their life on the line to defend our country and protect our freedoms. This is a time to honor all who served, and we want to say thank you to our veterans for your tremendous sacrifice and also for your family sacrifice. You all are our heroes who should be celebrated not just today, but every day. Our veterans' patriotism, their love of country, and willingness to serve deserves to be celebrated and honored. And so we do that today. And I read an article recently from David French, who is a contributor over at the National Review. He is a tremendous, brilliant mind, and he is also a veteran. And I read an article recently in which he talked about why he decided to join the military later in life. And he talks about what it means to be a patriot. And this is how he described what a patriot is when his young son asked what a patriot was as they were touring around Philadelphia looking at statues of our founding fathers who are the eminence of what it means to be a patriot. And David French responded by saying, "Patriots love their country more than they love themselves. And there is no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends. And our veterans lay down their life for friends and strangers, both here in our country and even others around the world." So thank you to all of the veterans. And more than just saying thank you, we should also ask, what can we do? What can I do? What can the church do to help honor and support our veterans? These are the questions we need to be asking. And our executive director at Nebraska Family Alliance, Karen Bowling, recently sat down for an interview with a former U.S. Marine and was able to ask these questions to him. His name is Chet Bennetts, and Chet is a veteran and American hero who spent time with the Marines in Iraq and Fallujah before receiving an honorable medical discharge. And I want to play his response, just a brief clip of how Chet responded to being asked about how we can support our veterans and what specifically the church can do to help.
Be present and don't be afraid, meaning just I think people sometimes are kind of fearful of what they might find if they do ask the questions of, are you okay and do you want to talk about it? But what I've found in my generation of warriors is that sometimes we do want to be asked. And I've given a lot of thought to this just in our own church. And I think it really comes down to, as a church or faith-based group, you have to be intentional about it. And it's really not any different than if you all of a sudden as a faith-based group wanted to serve the Hispanic community, you're going to have to speak the language. You're going to have to be ingrained in what that culture represents in order to minister to them in the best way possible. Well, veterans, it's the same way. It's a different language. It's a different philosophical thing of you have guys and gals that ingrained in them over years and sometimes decades is service. It's teamwork. It's community. It's serving with a higher purpose than just self-preservation. And we need to create opportunities as a church or as a faith-based group for these people who have a great skill sets in that to be able to serve in that way. Whether that's deliberately making sure that your security team, you know, you have a subset of that that's veterans. You got experts that could provide that. Or whether it's having a service project team that goes out and does community-based projects and is rebuilding a house or whatever the project is, have veterans involved in that and make it appeal to them in service as healing. That was my case. For me, it was figuring out how I could serve with a purpose and a calling that was greater than merely self-preservation.
That's what it means to serve. That's what it means to sacrifice. A really powerful and important reminder. And it's because of our veterans that we can even be here to talk on the show today about elections, and that millions of Americans were free to go to the polls and choose our leaders. It's because of our veterans. And thankfully, Nebraska's midterm election turnout was the highest that we have seen in decades. There was a lot of engagement, a lot of activity, and a lot of people showed up to vote. So what does it mean here in Nebraska? How do the results turn out? How does it affect family values and the pro-life movement moving forward? Everyone is, of course, talking about the Democrats flipping the House and regaining control, as well as the Republican Party expanding their control of the United States Senate. And we'll get to that a little bit later. But here in Nebraska, much of the focus has been on the Medicaid expansion ballot petition successfully being approved by voters. The state legislature had rejected expanding Medicaid, I think 7 years in a row. But now the people of Nebraska have voted and decided that is what the majority of voters would like to do. And now the state legislature will have to come back in the beginning of 2019, and they're going to have to work. They think somewhere between, at a minimum, $30 million, more likely closer to $50 million just in year one. That's going to have to fit somehow into the state budget, which means our state lawmakers have a lot of tough decisions and certainly a lot of gridlock awaiting them at the beginning of the 2019 legislative session. Another bit of interesting news came from the city of Lincoln, where voters approved term limits for the Lincoln mayor. Now, this will out the current mayor, Chris Beitler, from being reelected. He will conclude his current term, which he's in his third term, and that's what they set and approved the term limits at for 3 4-year terms. And now that that has been successful, now Democrats in Omaha are looking at doing the same thing, trying to set term limits by voter approval for the mayor of Omaha, since the Republican Party helped lead the charge to do that in Lincoln. I think that term limits are generally a policy that is favored by most people. It was a close vote in Lincoln. Voters approved the term limits for their mayor by 53-47%. This will have some pretty big implications. Lincoln will be getting a new mayor, and voters in Omaha may soon be deciding on term limits as well. We do have term limits in our state legislature, and this is where we want to focus today with the election analysis. Nebraska is so unique. Most everyone knows about our unicameral system, that we only have one house, and the people truly are the second house. But a lot of people don't realize that Nebraska, because of that, actually has the smallest state legislature in the entire country. We only have 49 state senators, 49 people. That's it for the whole state decide these major policies. And our state senators can serve 2 consecutive 4-year terms before being term limited out and having to sit out at least 4 years before being reelected again. And so the way it is set up, actually, half of the entire legislature is up for reelection or term limited out every 2 years. So there is a lot of turnover. There can be a lot of change. And that's what we saw with this election. There were some really excellent, high-quality, pro-life, pro-family candidates who won that we're really excited about. But there were also some high-quality, excellent pro-life, pro-family candidates who lost in some pretty important races that I think is going to set us back, possibly substantially. As I mentioned, with only 49 state senators, so many times a bill comes down to literally 1 or 2 votes. You need 33. And that often happens with pro-life legislation. And so when you lose just a couple of seats, as we did this election in our state legislature, that can have a major impact for the next 2 years on the ability or inability to pass certain legislation. And some of these races for our state legislature are being decided by less than 200 votes, and some by less than 50. Out of over 10,000 people voting, it is coming down to literally a handful of votes. Remind people of that when they tell you that your vote doesn't matter. It absolutely matters. We have the privilege to choose our leaders and, by extension, the policies that they choose that govern us. So if we want to see policy that protects all human life, which the vast majority of Nebraskans do, and we don't want to see legislation that would take away or infringe on religious freedom or free speech or parental rights, then pro-life and family values voters have to show up not just for the big races, not just in presidential elections, but for these state and local races as well. And again, Nebraska, another unique aspect, not only are we a unicameral, not only are we the smallest state legislature in the entire country, but we're also officially nonpartisan. So there's no R or D next to candidates' names for the state legislature. So that puts an extra responsibility on voters to make sure they really know where the candidates stand on these issues. These are the questions that people have to be asking, because as a result of some of these races for the state legislature and the way things have turned out, I think it's going to be some tough sledding for the next 2 years before we have another election for a lot of legislation that would protect the unborn or that is conservative in nature. Neither party has a majority. There's going to be a lot of gridlock. But conservatives and pro-life senators made a lot of headway in the last session. For example, for the first time, we were able to finally ensure that Nebraska's taxpayer dollars are not going to fund abortion or abortion providers. And for the first time, we were able to put language in our state budget and keep it there that would put up those protections to make sure that Nebraskans are not subsidizing the abortion industry. That is going to be a fight that we have to have again in 2019. Only now, the vote count isn't as strong. We're going to fight to keep making sure that Nebraskans are not subsidizing the abortion industry, but we could find ourselves in a scenario where abortion providers are getting those tax dollars returned to them. State Senator Teresa Thibodeau, who was appointed a year ago by Governor Ricketts to serve in the state legislature, she was the Republican candidate from Omaha. She lost to her opponent, Michaela Kavanaugh, who was endorsed and supported by Planned Parenthood by 1%, 200 votes. Matt Deaver, another Republican from Omaha running for an open seat to be a state senator, lost to his Democrat challenger, Wendy DeBoer, who also is opposed to that those Title X protections to keep taxpayer dollars out of abortion providers. And that race was decided by less than 50 votes. And another really big one that people were really watching that was getting a lot of attention and huge amounts of dollars being spent between State Senator Merv Reapy and his Democrat challenger, Steve Lathrop, who formerly held that seat, will hold it once again. Steve Lathrop won that race against Senator Reapy 55-45%. So if one thing's for sure, it's going to be another very interesting session starting in January. There will be a lot of new faces. We will also have new committees, new committee chairs, which determines a lot of what can and can't get done. And in the midst of all that change, Nebraska Family Alliance will be there. We work very hard to maintain a daily presence at the state capitol to ensure that faith and family values are represented every single day, because policies endorse and enforce a belief system. And we have to ask, whose belief system is that going to be? We are working diligently with lawmakers at every level of government to ensure that policies that are being introduced are ones that make sure that Nebraska is a state where marriages and families can thrive, life is cherished, and religious freedom flourishes. We provide a lot of fantastic free resources on our website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org, and we would encourage you to partner with us to stand for families in Nebraska, whether it's through prayer, whether it's through your time, whether it's through your finances. We are part of a growing national movement, but I can tell you firsthand that we need your help, because as someone who has the privilege of getting to spend a lot of time at our state capitol, Planned Parenthood has people there almost every day. The ACLU has people there almost every day. There's about a dozen nonprofit policy organizations funded by the Buffetts who are working with lawmakers. And as long as an organization that receives $500 million of taxpayer money every year is sending lobbyists to our state capitol to encourage our representatives to vote against pro-life policies or to expand abortion at the expense of innocent children, human lives. And as long as organizations like the ACLU are going down to our state capitol to argue that people like Christian cake baker Jack Phillips or artist Baronel Stutzman, who are good people, good Americans, should lose their livelihood or be in jail because they followed their sincerely held beliefs, then we will be there too. And the church can be the difference. The church is a sleeping giant in America, and so many people have the understanding that Christianity and politics should never mix or just preach the gospel and stay out of politics. It's too messy. It's too dirty. But if Christians aren't involved in politics, if Christians don't vote, if Christians don't run for office, who we're leaving these decisions and these positions open to? Who are we leaving to decide on our behalf what the role of the state is and whether or not we are going to protect unborn human life, whether or not we are going to protect the right of every American to live and work according to their beliefs, whether or not we're going to dictate or control what pastors say from the pulpits on Sundays, whether or not parents should be the ones to make certain decisions for their children, and that your education should not be determined by your zip code. Abandoning these issues and just leaving it up to somebody else is not a good way of loving our neighbor, and it is not a good way to protect what God has entrusted to us. And politics and government is not everything. It shouldn't be everything. It can't be everything. But if we want to keep the door open for the gospel, then we also have to be involved in the political process. Looking now at the larger races, the statewide and federal office positions in Nebraska, I think they all went about as expected. Governor Ricketts won re-election handily with nearly 60% of the vote. Bob Evnen for Secretary of State won over 61% of the vote. We have a new state treasurer and Republican, John Morante, who did not have a challenger, as did our Attorney General, Doug Peterson, was reelected. He also did not have a challenger. Charlie Jansen was reelected to serve as state auditor with 58% of the vote. And what was probably the most watched race here in Nebraska for our representative in Congress from Omaha, incumbent Republican Congressman Don Bacon, won re-election against Democrat challenger Kara Eastman. Don Bacon won 51.5% of the vote, which was a margin of about 7,400 voters. Congressman Adrian Smith in Western Nebraska District 3 cruised to re-election with over 75% of the vote. And Republican incumbent Jeff Fortenberry in District 1 also won re-election with over 60% of the vote. So no change in the governor's mansion or in the House of Representatives from Nebraska as well. And the same goes for the United States Senate. Incumbent Republican Senator Deb Fischer won her re-election against challenger Jane Raybould. Senator Fischer won 58% of the vote and will return to D.C. to continue serving the people of Nebraska for another six-year term. But I think perhaps, looking at the national scene, the biggest winner from the midterm elections may very well have been United States Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, because that whole ordeal with his confirmation was still at the center of this midterm election. And in battleground states, Democrat candidates for the United States Senate who opposed Judge Kavanaugh's confirmation were all defeated, and the one who didn't, Joe Manchin from West Virginia, won re-election. Every single Democrat United States senator from a red state who opposed Judge Kavanaugh's confirmation was defeated, and the lone Democrat who did not and supported Judge Kavanaugh, Senator Manchin, won his re-election. Not only that, but Republicans also grew their majority in the United States Senate, where all of the attention and focus has been about confirming judges. Senators Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, Indiana's Joe Donnelly, Claire McCaskill of Missouri, and Bill Nelson of Florida all suffered defeats on election night. All incumbent senators who opposed Judge Kavanaugh. There are obviously lots of issues and lots of priorities for voters, but certainly that was on the minds of voters when they headed to cast their ballot. And on that note, there was another story and further update. surrounding Judge Kavanaugh that we wanted to talk about today, because it is not being talked about elsewhere, certainly not by the mainstream media sources, in part because of the elections, but also because they don't want to talk about it, because a new investigation into all of the allegations against Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh found no evidence to back any of Judge Kavanaugh's accusers' claims. And this is according to the 414-page report released by Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa that demonstrated and went into detail, great detail, 414 pages of how investigators interviewed more than 40 people, monitored social media and news reports, and reviewed evidence provided by both Judge Kavanaugh and his accusers, and found that no witnesses could provide evidence to substantiate any of the claims. The report states that following the separate and extensive investigations by both the committee and the FBI, there was no evidence to substantiate any of the claims of sexual assault made against Justice Kavanaugh. In the 28-page summary of its findings, the committee explained that after speaking with 45 individuals and taking 25 written statements, it did not find any evidence to substantiate or corroborate any of the allegations. Senator Grassley said in a statement that the revelation of last-minute allegations tested the committee in many ways, but these investigative efforts rose to the occasions and were critical to helping us obtain the truth. This was a serious and thorough investigation that left no stone unturned in our pursuit of the facts. In the end, there was no credible evidence to support the allegations against the nominee. And this needs and deserves to be talked about after what they put Justice Kavanaugh and his family through. Some of those things you can't get back, but thankfully for everyone involved, we now have this official report from the Senate Judiciary Committee, which again spoke to over 45 individuals, took 25 written statements, concluding along with the FBI investigation that there is no evidence to substantiate or corroborate any of the allegations. So I wanted to be sure to talk about that report, but really the gains in the United States Senate are huge for judicial confirmations. From the previously narrow perspective of judicial confirmations, Mitch McConnell and Senate Republicans have increased their margin and given themselves a lot of extra space to keep confirming judges and, who knows, potentially another justice to the United States Supreme Court. This increased margin for Republicans in Congress also makes it more likely that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell will be able to get between 50 or 60 additional judicial nominees confirmed before the end of the year. And that in itself, especially in light of the House flipping and the impending gridlock we will see for the next 2 years, this is going to be especially important for the White House and Republicans to really champion for political victories, and most importantly, nominating and confirming more judges to the bench who are truly committed to the Constitution and interpreting the law, not making the law. That's the way I see it, and as always, for more information and to get the latest from Nebraska Family Alliance in the issues that matter most, family, freedom, and life, you can visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org, take advantage of our free resources. Sign up for our e-network to get the latest updates and stay connected to what's happening at our state capitol. And you can also, of course, subscribe to the Capitol Connection in the podcast app on your phone. It's completely free. Just search for Capitol Connection to stay up to date and join NFA to advance family, freedom, and life in Nebraska. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for Nebraska Family Alliance, hoping you will join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capitol Connection.